didn't know whether he was going to come in today.
Authorities are all over him.
Yeah, he's got, 18 hours now to be locked up at home. Plenty of other people staying at home. One of those will be Adam Collins, but his home is in the UK, and our cricket correspondent joins us on The Breakfast Club this morning. Collo, good morning.
Hello, Maisie. Hi, Scotty. I was going to say it was Watford. That was the last weekend of normality before all hell broke loose over here. I was watching Dulwich Hamlet win, and thankfully we stayed up. We would have been right in the hitting zone to go down if not for coronavirus, which is hardly cold comfort in this situation. But yes, Watford did beat Liverpool.
Yes, yes. So a few celebrations for Liverpool over there as well, causing a few concerns.
Yeah. I mean, in much the same way that let's broad brush it. The rules have been flouted almost everywhere, and we're seeing the knock-on effects, not least over here since we had the Dominic Cummings saga a few weeks ago. I think the public switched off, and they're paying the consequences now. So we've seen Leicester has been shut down yesterday, and it's horrible. So at least we'll have some cricket next week, because they've been quite savvy about the way they've been able to implement the biosecure areas. The old biodome Paulie Shaw movie comes to mind with that. But no, they have been able to engineer a scenario where the West Indies players are in the biodome, the Pakistan players as well, that they're practicing today, and they'll be able to play 6 test matches in 7 weeks, would you believe? It's going to happen very quickly.
Yeah, it's going to be a very busy summer. Tell us about some of those measures as well, and how publicised have they been? Because obviously every sport wants to sell itself as the safest in the world, and it's a difficult challenge for cricket being such an international sport. What's happened with the West Indies and Pakistan since they've arrived?
They've had a pretty good crack testing them. Feels like we're getting a press release talking about updated coronavirus tests every couple of hours. They are all over the private testing. So that's the first thing, I suppose, that they're managing what they can manage as far as the information flow is concerned. They have been quarantined. They've done their 2 weeks before they went outside and started practicing. So all of those boxes that one needs to tick to validate, I guess, their healthiness is being done, or all being undertaken before they even get to the stage where they're playing. So for the West Indies, I mean, fair play to them. They're coming all the way here. One of the, well, I think per capita, the most dangerous country in Europe right now as far as COVID-19 is concerned. They're not getting any money for this. They're coming out here in the ECB. So we know the balance of power in international cricket has been severely tilted in the favour of Australia, England and India over the last generation, and they've taken advantage of that over time, administrators from those countries in different ways. But it's the West Indies and Pakistan who are putting themselves in some danger by coming over here, you'd have to agree. So fair play to them, and I suppose you'd hope that favours will be returned in due course in some way.
Do you think that'll be rewarded from around the world once some of the other competitions get going in terms of 2020 leagues and all that sort of stuff? Do you think those competitions will look favourably, or this will just all be forgotten?
No, I think they will be. I think that it's like an understanding that it's a rising tide situation with cricket at the moment. That is to say, if we can start playing regular bilateral series, albeit under very controlled conditions, and obviously no saliva on the ball and the other ICC recommendations that are being implemented at the moment for this series inside the context of the World Test Championship, which of course is overseen by the ICC. So it's in a relatively strict set of parameters at the moment they're playing. And if that all goes off without a hitch, touch wood, famous last words, et cetera, but so long as it works and we come out the other end of the English summer, I think that there is a sense that the goodwill is going to need to be deprecated over time. As you say, whether it's T20 leagues, I mean, look, the fact that India have never permitted their players to come to the Big Bash, for example, and the fact that there's been a lack of movement between subcontinental countries and like things like that, which sometimes stick in the craw, I wonder whether now there'll be sort of a broader appreciation that we're all in this together, and now we can't sort of afford to worry too much about short-term financial gain. It's about the long-term financial sustainability of the game.
Now, Benny Stokes, redemption, this is the final little chapter of it. Is it, we were expecting this? I mean, Joe Root's obviously having a child, but the Stokes as captain, how does that sit over there?
Yeah, it's fascinating, Scotty. I mean, redemption is one word for it. I mean, I suppose another way of conceiving it is that no one really ever expected Ben Stokes to be captain of anything, at least Ben Stokes, truthfully. I mean, he's only captained, I was reading a fascinating piece today by a colleague of mine, he's only captained 3 games of cricket since he was 15 years old in any team, any team anywhere. So that reflects, I think, the fact that he's always been a sort of on-field leader. He's never needed the armband to behave in that way and to be seen as someone who could inspire his colleagues. And we saw that as recently as January when England won in South Africa. It was largely due to Ben Stokes being a leader on field and sort of didn't need the recognition as captain. But it is interesting that Stokes, as you say, like that horrible situation that he got himself into, and I stress got himself into, in Bristol in September 2017. I mean, I suppose it's a reminder to all of us that occasionally in life, there is a way back, and Stokes has found a way back. And on the field, obviously, his exploits in 2019 earned him what's known over here as the Sports Personality of the Year award from the BBC, which is a pretty big deal. There's been no cricketer that won that since 2005. So I suppose, you know, as it is a lot of the time with sports people, if they're able to perform, they're often forgiven, whether that's right or wrong. It seemed to be that he did his time as far as missing 6 months of cricket at the back end of 2017 and the start of 2018. Obviously, he was found not guilty by the courts in August 2018, and now a couple of years on from that, he's been given the chance to captain a test. Don't expect it to be a long-term thing, though. I don't think anyone in England cricket think that Ben Stokes is the right guy to be the captain of the test team, because, I mean, there's not because of his character, purely because he's an all-rounder. And we know that being an all-rounder and being captain rarely works well. See the evidence of Ian Botham and see the evidence of Andrew Flintoff. Both of their captaincy careers were terrible as England captain. So I think that they'll be reticent to do it on a long-term basis. But for a one-off, I guess, because he's vice-captain, he's afforded that privilege.
Who are the possible candidates for Joe Root's replacement, say, in 12, 18 months or whenever that happens?
Well, I mean, it may not be 12 or 18 months. That's assuming that Root weren't to do it long-term. Root's not an old man in cricketing terms. There's no reason why he couldn't do it for a few years. I mean, usually England captains go for about 4 or 5 years. That tends to be the orthodoxy in recent times. But I guess the man most likely is Rory Burns, because he's been a fantastic skipper at Surrey. He's not yet 30, I don't believe. He's won the championship a couple of years ago. He's an established player in this England team now as the opening bat. So in the event that Root did want to hand it over, or indeed if he was replaced, there was some talk late last year that due to the fact that his batting average is about 10 runs less when he's skipper compared to when he's not skipper, and they may want to have Root the batsman more than Root the skipper. I think Rory Burns would be an option they look at closely there. Or indeed they might, and this is probably a bit of a long shot given he's not the most established player in the side, but also Josh Butler, who is being made Stokes' vice-captain this week, that they've often turned to Butler to captain the limited oversight when Owen Morgan's been taking a breather. So he'd be an outside pick, but I think the most likely scenario is that Root will do it for a long time.
What's the feeling been around Joe Root's leadership? Because obviously it was questioned a fair bit in the last sort of 12 or 18 months. Mm. Just recently, obviously with the COVID shutdown, there's been no cricket to judge. But what has been the feeling heading into this test series about his leadership?
I think the feeling is that there's a lot of goodwill towards Root. People around the game over here sort of view Root as one of the good guys in the game. Now, whether that can tally with being a great captain, I mean, often it can take a while. I mean, we've seen with Australian captains over the years, it takes some time, not only to feel comfortable in the role, but to, I don't know, develop that thick skin. Alan Border is a great example of that. It took him some time as leader before he really found the rhythms of the job. And I think that England cricket are desperately hoping that Root does, and does it in such a way that he can average in excess of 50 rather than hovering around 40 while he's wearing the skipper's armband. So that's the big test for Root, I think. It's less about his leadership skills and his tactical nous, although that's definitely part of it. It's how does he combine the pressures and the rigours of being captain? And, you know, look no further than Stephen Smith for how the rigours of captaincy can wear away at a human being as much as a player. I mean, you know, having travelled around with the Australian side for the duration of Smith's captaincy, he always looked absolutely knackered. Now, he made a lot of runs, but I think that the wear and tear of that job is sometimes misunderstood. It's the constant stream of interviews you have to do. It's the constant meetings you need to sit in addition to playing the game and then walking out at number 3 or number 4 and being the most important player in the side. So I think that's, for Root, going to be the test. Can he find a way to balance all of this at the same time whilst being a format player, which we know is not easy to do on the international circuit. So, look, it's probably, even though he's been skipper for a couple of years, it seems a bit weird to say that, too early to say. Actually, he's been captain for 3 years now. He made his captaincy debut early in 2017, I think it was. So he's been in there for a while, but I think this story's got some way to run yet.
Now, Colo, any surprise that the Sri Lankan government has launched an inquiry into the 2011 World Cup final that claiming India may have bought the win?
I did see that. I mean, it's a bit old school, isn't it? To sort of to
the government inquiry.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look, it's a long time ago. I think that with these matters, I mean, we've often seen over the journey media reporting of stings of match fixing. I remember famously the Al Jazeera documentary a couple of years ago, which, you know, fairly disgracefully tarnished some Australian players in the process. They covered their faces up, but it was pretty clear what they were asserting, and they were never able to stack any of that up. So I'm mindful that often when you hear people talk about these things, that one shouldn't jump to the worst conclusions until all the evidence has been there. But in saying that, I mean, I'm sure they'll go through the usual process. There's an integrity officer, there's an integrity unit, I should say, at the ICC, and some very, very smart people who earn a lot of money working there to do just this. So if there's anything in it, they'll find out. But yes, it did strike me as a fraction odd.
Colo, one last one just before we let you go. What's the situation with the domestic cricket over in England at the moment? What's happening county-wise there?
Look, this is probably a good story. I mean, out of everything over here. Now, remember, I can't stress enough, it is a shambles over here. Like, no one should have any other conclusion than that. We've had over 45,000 people die. This is crazy over here.
Yeah.
But with all of that said, August 1 for county cricket, whether it's a modified county championship or a series of friendlies, that's unclear. What they're talking about is having three divisions. This was the original plan. Three divisions, a limited schedule of games between August and October, and playing a county final, actually, at Lords in October, which they don't do over here. Normally, it's like a league system. The winner of the comp's the winner of the comp. But they were talking about finishing it with a final. How they had two finalists when you've got three groups, I don't think they quite solved that problem yet. But still, it could be quite an exciting way to end a truncated system. And the most important thing for the counties, they need the T20 blast to take place because the blast is on television,
yep,
and thus the money from Sky. So they're going to try and find a way to squeeze in, I guess it would be around 7 or 8 first-class games, including the final, and a selection of T20 blast games in order to make some money from TV from the season. If they can pull that off, I think the counties would be relieved because their players, for the most part, have been on furlough since April, which means they can't access the club, they can't access the gym, they can't use the nets. I mean, it's a pretty, if you're furloughed, you're not a professional cricketer anymore as far as the government's concerned. So one step at a time, but August 1 is the date they've flagged yesterday, and it looks as though recreational cricket in some capacity, in some form, will probably return in July. So again, what that amounts to, we have no idea because Boris Johnson said last week that the cricket ball is the vector of disease, and didn't sound particularly persuasive when he said that. It sounded like he made it up on the spot, the policy on cricket. So they've spent the last week or so trying to unscramble that egg. But it looks like sometime in July we'll get some sort of cricket over here recreationally.
Oh, that'll be good. We'll look forward to chatting a couple more times throughout the English summer, even though it may be abbreviated. Colo, thanks so much for your time on this Wednesday morning down under. We'll catch up again soon.
I've dropped out, Joey.
Oop, he might have just dropped out at the end there. Adam Collins there. He couldn't hear us, but we could hear him, Scotty. The lockdown over there is a whole different ballgame.
Exactly. That's what I said before. Yeah. Understandably, we're concerned, but we are nowhere near what's going on the other side of the world.
No, exactly. And definitely an uphill battle for all those sports. Imagine being a professional cricketer over in England now and you haven't played bowled a ball all summer.
Yeah.
Not ideal.
Not ideal.
3-0 Manchester United still over Brighton. Our man
in goal. Come on, Aaron
goal.
Moy.
Yeah, Aaron Moy. I don't know if he's actually got a start. I have to check that.
Oh, he's not getting a game.
Well, no, he wasn't. It hasn't got a start again.
No,
so left out of the starting lineup. He is on the bench, though, Aaron Moy. So
he's our best player.
Well, he is. Yeah.
He needs to be getting a game somewhere.
Relative. I think Matt Ryan's our best player. but he's
the guy who's just let through three. That's an
he's playing Manchester United. Give him credit.